All right. So welcome again to another podcast with Great Guns. Today I'm having a conversation with a very interesting gentleman who spent 13 years in the police force, but the story starts a lot earlier than that. So yeah, I'm just going to get into it. So welcome to the show. Si, great to have you on board.
Yep. Cheers. Thanks for the invite, James. Thank you.
Brilliant. So obviously we were just chatting just before we started recording, and you were kind of giving me a bit of a brief. So for the audience, if you wouldn't mind just maybe just going through a little bit of your experience. Leeds Police Force for 13 years, which led to a few things. Do you mind just kind of letting the listeners know a little bit about that background?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll sort of sum it up nice and quick in a nice sort of quick way. I would just say that childhood wasn't great. So then I was always looking to try and better myself and whatever it was. Then I decided to do really well and pick the wrong partners. Then I was in the police and, you know, going well, doing things like that. But then the home life started to interfere with the work life. The work life wasn't supporting the home life or supporting what was going on in my home life. And then it just all crumbled down in a huge way. Whereas I ended up having to go onto medication of 200 milligrams of sertraline a day, which is actually turning me into a zombie. So that's the very short, packed up into a little box version of it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. But just for the listeners, you're in a good place at the moment and you were doing extremely well work-wise and personally, aren't you?
You see, some people say that I went through a breakdown. I would class it as a breakthrough. It took me away from being in the institutionalized situation that I was in the police, where you saw bad in everybody because you just did, because that's how you deemed everyone. And the only time that you'd go speak to someone was if you were going to lock them up, or you were going to go give them bad news, or it was a domestic situation. Always bad news. Whereas now, I'm speaking to people, like, say, for example, today, I'm meeting lots of people when I'm out and about, networking, everything like that. I'm working with people all over the world, having a good time, you know, rather than a sad time, if you know what I mean. So 100%, I would not change anything in terms of, I've not looked back one day since I left the police and thought, oh my God, I wish I was still there, which I thought I would, as it seemed as this was the thing that I wanted to do from being a kid. That was what I always wanted to do. But literally from how I was treated and everything like that, it just made me realize this is not the place for me. This is not what I want to do. And there's better things out there. And Jesus, there is so much better stuff out there. If you look for it and you apply yourself and you learn, my motto is, as long as you are, well, you have to be better every single day, and you will be better every single day than the day before because you've learned something. You'll have learned something that you didn't know the day before. So as long as you're improving, as long as you're learning, you're not dying. And as soon as you start thinking that I know it all or everything like that, and you start to just, so that's what my whole life's about, is always learning, everything like that. So I run my own business and life's just a lot better than what it was before. So that's a little sum up there for you, mate.
Have you been out of the police force then?
So I left the police force in 2016, so 9 years.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you've been out quite a while. I just wanted to go back then. Obviously, kind of like you've said, there's quite a few parts to your story. You spoke about childhood not being great, and you'd mentioned to me about bullying when you were at school because of your size and that. Was that kind of the majority of what you saw as being not great, or was it more of kind of home life, things weren't great?
No, I would say that it was the school thing, really. I mean, that was my solace, was just to go home after school. But because I was brought up very well by my mum, I became a mummy's boy, which never helps when you are being, you know, prey to bullies, you know, like, I mean, there's even a story that when I was at primary school, I just stood there like that, waiting for someone to address me. You know what I mean? That sort of, you know, this is probably the sort of mindset I had. So it was really easy to prey on me. I was little, I had ears that stuck out, got called the FA Cup, everything like that. I had an operation, pin them back. But yeah, so that's, you know, the gist of it, really.
Yeah.
Nothing at home, I was going to say nothing at home, really. It was just the school side of things and the bullying. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. And if you struggle with that, I mean, that's going to set you up going forward, isn't it? You know, if you feel that you always could be the victim and you're always going to be picked on, it's not a great start, is it? So you then, you said you when you left school, did that happen all the way up until you left school, or did that change at some point, or was it only after you left that it kind of changed for you? Because you mentioned to me earlier that you're 6'2". I mean, that's quite tall. I mean, can be quite an imposing figure, I would have thought.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, when I was in the police, I was seen as like action man. They gave me all sorts of nicknames, Robocop, all sorts, because I was a unit, tall, muscular. But until 16, I was really small, 5'5". And then at 16, all of a sudden, I started growing and growing and growing, basically, and where I am now with this height. So as we got to the end of high school, and then I moved on to go to college, then it all changed, if you get what I mean. So then it wasn't bullied at college. It was just that high school, middle school, primary school.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, and then you said you were went to college, and then you ended up teaching, but the police force was kind of where your ultimate goal was, and you did mention that it wasn't quite a smooth transition into the police force.
Yeah, no, 100%. So all the way through school, all the way through growing up, if anyone asked me what I wanted to do, I wanted to be a policeman, and I decided to go. I decided to go and think, right, okay, I'll go to college and then I'll try and get into the police. But I thought, first of all, I'll go to university just to give me a bit of grounding. So I was at university. I thought, bit of life experience. I always had part-time jobs all the way through. And then I thought, right, I'll go for the police. And I got turned down whilst I was at university and doing the doors, because I started doing doors while I was at university again, which I think is a little bit of a thing coming back from childhood and always wanting sort of approval and attention, which is quite crazy when you think about it. And then I got turned down from the police. So I went into the teaching for a couple of years. And then as soon as I could, I reapplied and then got into the police force. So it went straight in, nice and easy.
Yeah. Okay. And just out of interest, when you were working on the doors, would people see you as a kind of an approachable doorman, or were you one of those ones that people would always talk about going, geez, he's a rough, hard ass?
I would always say that one of my superpowers, if I've got a superpower, is the ability to be able to speak to people, network with people. That's what I think, if I was to give myself a skill. So I would always, if needed, be able to handle it if it came to the door, but I would much rather talk my way around it and be the right sort of, you know, not bring the aggression. Just try and calm it down. Always open hands, you know what I mean? It's that sort of idea.
Yeah, I was just interested because often, you know, I would have thought, you know, people that have been picked on or whatever, like when they're young, it's kind of, right, it's, you know, no one messes with me. And then they can often go to the further extreme where they become kind of arsy and the hard ass. But then I suppose that being the approachable guy, the one being able to kind of diffuse situations, stood you in good stead with the when you were in the police.
100%. And again, like you said, people that potentially, there will have been a lot of people that were bullied that went into the police as well. But you could see that with a lot of people. You had a lot of people with little man syndrome, people that as soon as they put a uniform transformed into the Incredible Hulk for some weird reason. Whereas I would rather just, even if I was arresting someone, just chat to them, say, listen, mate, let's get you down station, get you in, get you out, get you interviewed as quick as possible. Let's get it done. Or we can have a scrap, but we'll both get sweaty. And I'm not right up for that because I've got another 6 hours left in my shift. Let's just, you know, that sort of way of speaking to people, which even if you speak to people now that I dealt with, I have people, which is crazy, come up to me still in like restaurants and stuff who know me from when I've locked them up and say, you are the soundest copper that I ever dealt with type thing, which is really mad when you think that they would be really cheesed off that I've taken the liberty.
Yeah, but I think that speaks volumes about you, and you know, it says a lot of what they think of you, which I would have thought, well, I do think is an amazing thing to have happened. Yeah. Well, okay. So you're in the police force, and so you did 13 years, and you did. I remember you saying that you were a sergeant. So what policing were you doing? Was it all frontline, or did you specialize in anything during that time?
So whilst I was in the police, I managed to do a lot of different other things. So like I did the hooliganism with the fans going, up and down with Leeds United, up and down the country. I managed to do obviously direct policing where you go in with your blue lights on, everything like that. Dealing with prisoners inside the, interviewing them, everything like that. Did a bit of terrorist jailing as well, where we had to look after people that had been brought in from, doing terrorist stuff. What else did I do? All sorts. I tried to do as much. Oh, I was also a public order instructor. So I used to teach people how to deal with the riots, all that sort of stuff, shields, petrol bombs, all that sort of stuff. So we'd go do that. And I think that was about it. Then I did my qualification to become the sergeant, got fully qualified. Then you do an interview procedure where you do role play and you have to pass your role play to get the second part of the sergeant. And then what you have to do is you have to be put forward by your team, supervisors, whatever, to be given the opportunity to act up. So then you can be finalized in a position. Well, for 5 and a bit years, I was qualified, but never got an opportunity to act up. So I think that's partly because of the things that I brought from my home life. But sometimes your face just doesn't fit in some things, and my face certainly didn't fit. Definitely at that point, I feel. But I might have brought it upon myself as well.
Yeah, but I mean, if you were struggling and carrying things that, and we'll go into that, you were dealing with, and not getting the support or not getting help with it, then it's not your fault. And sometimes people on the outside should be looking at you and going, well, "How can I help?" Instead of just going, "Yeah, don't worry about it. Look for the next person," type thing. So to get into it, then you said that you ended up just on a day going into work and it just all came kind of to a head. Do you want to just tell us a bit about that? Like what happened? What unfolded there?
So I was working in the control room, basically, where, you send people to the jobs. So you do that as something as well. And I was told to do that as a thing to help me get a position of being a sergeant so I could control people. Never quite materialized as sold to me. But I was just there that morning, just having some breakfast upstairs on my break. And then I just sat with someone and I just completely just lost the ability to talk. And lost the ability to, I mean, sometimes now, if I get myself too stressed up, I really start to not stutter, but sort of get all my words mixed up and it goes a bit crazy. So there's still something not quite 100% fixed, but then was just horrendous. I just couldn't even function or anything. So I got taken to the doctors for an emergency doctor appointment and they just said, listen, you can't work. You're in no fit state. We've not seen a case like this as bad as this. You need to be on this serious amount of medication. So literally from the day before, probably going to the gym, doing whatever normal, the next day, that morning, just being completely out of it. And then having to go live with my mum down in Norfolk for three and a bit years, maybe 4 years to get better. So yeah, it was a dodgy time, let's just say, for that.
There was no trigger. There was nothing that kind of set you off on that. It just crept up on you, or like, were you aware of something was building up? Were you aware that things weren't right in your life, or was it just you would just keep pushing through and trying to get through each day?
I think I was aware that things were materializing, and because I'd gone through a really bad divorce, I had no respect for women, which is bad. So I became a real player. Then I started having all sorts of things going on, and it was just like the Jeremy Kyle show, without a doubt. And that didn't help. And then all sorts of undercurrents and everything. And I think the fact that my dad had told me that he didn't believe that I was his son and he wanted a DNA test when I was 30
But you said
was
30,
not
like 3-0.
30, yeah, was not the nicest experience either. And then just before that, I'd sat with my gran. My gran had helped bring me up. So my mum and dad used to go to work and they used to cross over at times. So my gran would always be at home and look after me, do my dinners and everything. And so she brought me up and she was like the most amazing person in the world. So in this same period as all this crazy stuff going on with the relationship, all this crazy stuff with my dad, and that sort of situation. And then also the watching and staying with my gran whilst I watched her die was the most weird experience. I'd seen hundreds of dead bodies, hundreds in my job. And yes, you have a bit of dark humour, but it's not associated to you. It's not a person to you. So when you actually see someone that is your loved one and sit with them while they actually take the last breath, that certainly had a bad effect on me, I think. And then everything else just culminated in just bush explosion. So,
yeah.
There.
That's, that, yeah, I mean, I can imagine it. Sorry?
I think that's where that was like just everything just sort of touching like electricity, you know, like it's all been building up and then all of a sudden it just touches and then bang, just goes. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, it sounds almost like, I don't know how to describe it, like the perfect storm where it all the right, and I'd say right things in inverted commas that happened at once to make it into that event. If I may ask, like, with all the craziness that was going on, was there nothing kind of ringing bells for you saying, I need to sort this out, or, you know, I need to look for help, or anything along those lines? I know you said when we were chatting that when you were there at the time, the support wasn't there for you. Did you try and seek that sort of look?
So whilst I was in the police, people knew there was stuff going on because they could obviously see it. I mean, they knew what was going on. You know, I could come into work sometimes potentially with when I was in the bad relationships with some injuries, which obviously you just played off, but people like, you know, something's not right. But because I was looking for promotion, I was told by supervisors and everything like that, yes, we can get you to refer you to occupational health, but if you do go down this with the mental health issues, then that's going to put a massive, massive blot on your copybook for looking to get promoted, because they won't see you as stable. So then I just took the, well, do you know what? I'm just going to try and fix it myself type thing. I'm not going to go down that line. Do you know what I mean? So I'll just, and then I tried to do it myself, but it just clearly was not going to happen. And then it was just that little, you know, like when your fuse goes in your house and it just goes, a circuit breaker. I think that's just what happened. And it was like, boom, that's it. Reset, let's go again. And that's what I did.
That's quite sad to hear that, you know, your own people that should be looking after you in the workplace are putting that kind of pressure on you to not look after yourself because of they're saying it's going to threaten your career path. At the end of the day, everybody suffers from some form of mental health issue or stress or strain that we should be looking out for each other. Do you think that's still the case now? This many years later, do you think they've woken up to the fact, or do you know?
I don't know, but from all the officers that I still speak to, there's not that many actually, but from the ones I do speak to, tell me that it's got so much worse, that they're now like robots, that they can't make their own decisions, that it's got even worse, that they're overworked and everything like that. So I just think to myself, that circuit break might have been the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And now I'm not stuck in there because for years, I've been thinking, I don't know if this is the right thing for me, for years, because of all the unsupport and all the stuff that were going on at home. And the fact that anything that you did slightly wrong, you were really worried about it being magnified because you're a police officer, if you get what I mean. So if you were in a situation where it became a domestic incident, but because you're a police officer, all they need to do is make that phone call and then you get put into... I'd seen my colleagues being accused of rape by the partners. I've seen them being accused of everything. And these like were a bit crazy, these people that they were living with, who they're no longer with, obviously. But I'd seen how that had affected them. Do you know what I mean? And then you'd actually seen it where other officers had gone that far down the bad path that they never came back and left the planet, if you get what I mean. So there's a lot of suicide in the police. I am actually quite shocked how much there is. But I know of at least probably 12 people that whilst I was in the last few years of the job and since that have took their own lives due to the strain and stress and pressures at being in police, which is quite sad.
I don't think that's a fact that's really well known. You do see the occasional thing that's reported about it. And I think it tends to be a more around like military veterans that kind of gets publicized more, but nowhere near enough. And it's sad that they're not including the police in that, because at the end of the day, the stuff that you guys see and do, and just from interviewing people and guys I know who are ex-police officers or current, you know, you just think that the kind of stuff you go through and see and you got to deal with, and that's not being highlighted. It's quite shameful, actually. And I imagine it's like that across all the forces, not just a particular force, I would have thought.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've got family members that have not been supported, that have been, you know, in situations that it looks like police look for a scapegoat as well now, rather than supporting you with things that go on, they look like more for scapegoats. So it's, you know, there's lots of cases that I know of that if it actually ever came out to, you know, people understood exactly what has actually happened in these situations, they'd be like, oh my God, why on earth have they not backed him? But I do know that police are getting a worse rep all the time, obviously with the two-tier care and all that sort of stuff that's been said all over about the police. And it was actually even like quite concerning as well that basically when I was speaking to these police officers, they're all changing now their allegiance in terms of voting and all that sort of stuff. And it just seems to be a sad place, really, in terms of, and I'm just pleased to be out of it, to be honest, 100%.
Yeah. So, obviously, you went through that. You never, when you were going through your, when you, I think when you said you stayed at your mother's and you were going through therapy and so on, there was never a time there that you actually went, no, I want to go back. Or did that decision come later? Or was it, did it happen kind of there and then?
No. I'd actually made a bad decision whilst I was in the police and whilst I was ill and under pressure, and then you understood all that. I made a bad decision, and then in the end I actually ended up losing my job. I'm actually thankful they did take it off me, because if it had been a case where I could have probably gone back, I'd have been weak and said, I've got security here potentially, even though while I was ill I never decided that I wanted to go back, and I never thought once I want to go back. So yeah, I mean, it's like I'd probably locked up 1,500 people, 13 years. I'd dealt with so many jobs. I'd been on TV, actually live, saving people's lives, pulling them off bridges, all that sort of things. But you make some slight mistakes and you're not backed. You're not well, you're not backed. So I'm just so pleased to be out of it.
So you were mentioning there that you like helping someone that was looking to take their own life. How did you deal with that when you got at the end of the shift? How did you deal with things like that?
I think what you do is, I mean, obviously, you'd see things that you could only ever see in movies. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like decapitations, bodies in half, compound fractures, people with their arms chopped off, people with the faces slit open, Chelsea smiles, all that sort of things that you see, which are quite horrific. It just becomes part of the job. It's crazy. And you can't even think that it would, but it does. It just becomes like that. So this guy, I mean, after we pulled him over, I don't know whether he was attention seeking or not, but he did just say after, you know, I was going to jump, you saved my life. So whether we did or not, I don't know. He was going to jump into a river, but, you know, but it was on TV, pulled him over and brought him back on. But yeah, it's a chapter of my life. Like everyone has like chapters in a life and in a book. And I'm just pleased that that chapter is over and my new chapters are far more exciting, with more positivity to them, if you get what I mean, in terms of...
Yeah. 100%. So thinking about all that, the positivity, and obviously I will talk about where you are now and what you're doing, but just for someone that's in a similar situation to what you were in, or kind of suspecting, or, you know, that they are in trouble, what would you say to them? What advice would you give them?
Well, any sort of investigation, if they're in trouble as well in the police, if anything ever goes wrong in the police and you become investigated, it could take forever. It could take years and years and years. If you're feeling down in normal times in the job, then I did go seek help, and I was always like, well, I'd never seek help. You know, I can sort this out. But sometimes you have to do. Otherwise, you will come to a breaking point, and that breaking point can either be a circuit breaker or you take your own life. So people don't want to do that, obviously. So I would just say that, you know, and the big, big, massive bit of advice I've got is if you really, 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 really don't want to be in a job, whatever job it is, say, for example, police or whatever, do not just stay there for the security. You get one life. It's not a rehearsal. And if you just stay in there and you're not happy and everything, you just need to get out. because there is other opportunities out there. And what you do get from the police is you get transferable skills that you can use in other places. You know how to deal, to speak to people. You know how to follow systems. You know how to do procedures. So all these things that you'll think you won't be able to get a job when you get out, you can. So that's what I would definitely say.
Yeah, I love that you've just said about the transferable skills, because that's the one thing people forget, whether you're police, you know, any emergency services or you know, you've served in the armed forces, you've got so many transferable skills that are valid outside in the civilian world that people want. And it's great that you mentioned that, because I think people do forget that. I've got to ask, because obviously you've done, well, you've done a bit of work with my wife and had chats about work and what you're doing now. And she says you're incredibly funny. You've got some funny stories. What's the funniest thing you can think of when you were in the police that kind of made you chuckle and kind of thought, yeah, okay, that was funny?
I'm trying to think. This is a problem, you see. If it's at the top of my head, it'll come off. I couldn't even remember. It's about crazy it is a little bit, that I don't even remember things that I've even said in terms of stories, which is pretty bad. So, I mean, I think a lot of my humour just comes spare of the moment, and I probably won't even remember it if you ask me it tomorrow.
Fair enough.
I'm quite a dry person. I think that's probably what she means in terms of with regards to that. But there has been some, yeah. Great. Well, I mean, I suppose some of the funny stories, I mean, if you look at it as being a bit of a klutz, I had to go look for a guy in a loft inside a house, and I had to climb up into the loft, bearing in mind I'm a big lad. I were, like I said, like bodybuilder, 6'2", and I'm climbing around the loft. And the next thing, I'm hanging upside down outside the kid's bedroom because I've fallen through the loft, through the bottom of it, and my foot's stuck in the loft and I'm hanging down from it, you know. So I got a nickname, Lofty, from that. So, I mean, you can get funny. You can be in the job and there's funny things happen that lift the mood, because obviously, like you said, you see horrendous things and then that gets talked about for a bit and then it becomes next week's fish and chip shop wrapper. But yeah, no, there's lots of funny things. I'm just trying to think now. Now I'm feeling under pressure. I can't.
It's fine. I was just curious if there was something that you could remember there straight away. So right. So you left the police force, you went through a process of healing, and I like what you said when I was chatting to you earlier about, you know, there was a Band-Aid. If it's pulled off now, that wound is healed. But you did mention that, you know, if you're under stress now, you can still feel that it. Not quite coming on, but you can feel that you are struggling with that. Does that get better? Are you actively working on that now? Or is it you kind of have drawn a line in the sand going, right, I've done my help. I've got my help. I'm good now. Or do you work on that sort of every day?
So, yeah, I mean, I try to go to the gym every day. I mean, so just as a little example, in April, I were 21 stones. I've lost 4 stones since we've done April. What we're in now, we're in September. So, but I'd lost that by July, so it only took me a few months to get that off. So I've got a very good, disciplined, all or nothing type attitude. I'll go into it. I feel that if you exercise every day, you're exercising your mind as well, which obviously helps with your dopamine and lifting you up on a morning. So I think you start the morning the best way off. If you stay in bed all day and get up at 10 or 11 o'clock, then I think your day is ruined before you even start. That's my personal opinion. Yeah, I work on it. I try and improve my diet. I've cut out all the big things that I used to eat, obviously, hence why the weight goes down. And I think that you just need to keep improving yourself every day, learning whatever it is that you want to learn, and try to be. And the big thing that I really did learn, whereas before I was ill, I was very good at talking at people, waiting for people to finish talking and then say what I want to say next, not really paying attention to what they were telling me. Because whatever I was going to say was always going to be more important than what they were saying. And then there was a switch, and I watched a TV program, the First Dates, where they're all in the restaurant. And they just said to her after a date, how was that date? And she said, oh, it was amazing. And then they said to her, what was his name and what does he do? And she had no idea. And that hit home to me that people like to talk about themselves. So that's the reason we've got 2 ears and 1 mouth. So literally when we are talking to people, listen to them, be interested, not interesting. And if you do that, I think life's far better. You learn so much more about people. You learn and build rapport. Because if you are someone that just sits and talks at you, I switch off. And now I realize that's what I must have done to other people in the past, if you get what I mean. So I think you've just got to keep working on yourself and doing that. But I've just accepted some things you can't do anything about. And that's just one of those things that if I do get myself a little bit stressed and apprehensive, that I'm going to have a little bit of a wobble, just sort myself back out and then get on again, you know, because it's not uncommon for this sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you up to now then? What's keeping you busy?
Well, I've got a few real exciting things that we do. So I've obviously gone into the world of AI and everything like that. So when I left the place, instead of doing like the Netflix and just watching TV all the time whilst I was getting better or watching box sets or anything, I decided I'm going to start watching webinars. And I used to watch webinars up till early hours of the morning, learning all the new strategies that are coming in with digital marketing, that are coming in with ads, all these sort of things, the artificial intelligence that was coming in that I sort of knew about a few years ago before it really started to earth itself now. I just kept learning. So now I run my own business, got a digital marketing company. We've got a software business. We've got an AI crypto bot as well, which is fantastic, which helps people make between 15 and 30% profit on average. So people are loving that. And I just love to keep myself busy and getting the ability to get out there and speak to people. And obviously, the other thing is just the chatbots, you know, the building chatbots that you see everywhere. I love to build them, and I'm quite got a good reputation in the UK for them, you know, for a reputable agency to be able to do that. So I feel that I've gone from zero, but not quite to hero, because I'm always going to improve. But I've gone from a very, very, very low point where I managed to build up relationships, like obviously meeting Leanne and people like that at the events. Just love networking and building networks and relationships. That's where I thrive. I think that's my favorite thing.
And into marketing, like in digital marketing, where did that come from? Because if you think, like teaching, and then you were in the police force. I know you did, like you said, you did some instruction there as well. But then to go into marketing, that's quite a shift. Where did that come to you?
It's a bit of a crazy one. So basically what happened was I did my degree in computing, business information technology. But everything that I learned in my degree, everything I learned in my degree is now obsolete. Things like Microsoft Access, you know, and Oracle databases that nobody uses no more. All that sort of stuff. I learned that. So I ended up understanding of it. But then whilst I was going through sort of the dodgy marriage, I had to find myself something to do. So I started doing a little bit of network marketing and learning about that. And then realized that the people that were doing really well in network marketing were good at doing digital marketing, which I still didn't really know about too much. So then I thought, when I got ill, this is an opportunity to learn and move into a place where I know is profitable. So that's why I did that. So that sort of explains the transition a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah, and it very much makes sense now. I didn't realize your degree was in computing. Okay, so yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there who is looking to leave the service, what would your advice be to them? I know your transition was very, very difficult for you at the time, and obviously for different reasons. But if anyone's looking to leave, you've kind of reinvented yourself, well, a couple of times, you know, once a teacher, then a police officer, and now you're into digital marketing and AI. So you've recreated a new you a couple of times. What would your advice be to someone looking, whether they're leaving the forces or service, to kind of, they're going to need to reinvent themselves? Because far too often people end up going, oh, I was in the police, so I'll do security. Or, you know, like with the army, they generally go, oh, well, I'll do the circuits and that sort of thing. And then later on realize actually they want to get something else. So what advice do you have to someone that's looking to maybe make that transition and they don't make the same mistake of just flopping into the next job role that's very similar to the one they just had, that they're just leaving?
Yeah, I think what a lot of people think is the stability of the police, obviously with the pension. Obviously now the pension is not as good as it used to be years and years ago, even just before I joined, where it all changed. Where you used to get you used to get house rent, you used to get all sorts of special things as being a police officer. So I think that the security side of things is not exactly what it was now. And I know a lot of people that come into it and leave. Whereas when I was in there, you wouldn't get anybody coming in and leaving. It was like, you know, a job for life. I think it's lost its tag as job for life, 100%. And I'd tell people, don't be scared. If you don't feel it's right, get out. You've got plenty of skills that you can use. You can talk to people, you can network people. You'll have learned computer skills as well whilst now, because all the police officers are using computers to do all their reports and everything. So you've got these skills. And as long as you are one or two pages ahead of the person that you are teaching, you can always be a coach to people as well. That's all you need to be. A couple of pages ahead, you know. That's what, like, the Catch Me If You Can, that's what he said, didn't he? The guy that was in Catch Me If You Can. How could he be teaching all these different things? If he could, yeah. If he could be a couple of pages ahead of the person, next person or the class, he was always going to be seen as an expert. And I think, don't feel that you need to be perfect. Just feel you need to be in progress. And I can safely tell you guys that if you're in, you know, you're thinking, oh God, what about the money and everything? I earn so much more money now easily than when I was in the police, with not having to risk my life every day for it. And knowing when I'm going to be at home and being able to do what sort of what I want to do when I want to do it. So it gives you the freedom, because when you do get into the police force and things like that, you do become institutionalized and you sort of become a number, not a person. And that's quite important, because, you know, you have to stay on, do overtime, do all these sort of things. But just, if you are thinking of leaving, have a good think about it. Don't just make any hasty decisions. But don't feel that it's the end of your life if you do leave the police. There's still a fantastic life out there that you can make, you know, more money. You can enjoy yourself more. You can go on more holidays, whatever it is that you wanted to do. And just remember that whatever it is you want to do, it's up to you. The only person that will stop you doing what you want to do is yourself. So you set your targets, you hit your targets. You don't hit your targets, then that's your fault. So I think that, just don't get yourself locked in where you feel that you can't get out. That's what I would say.
And if someone was looking to head into the worlds of online marketing and AI obviously being the big thing, any thoughts on where it's good to start?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the big thing at the moment is ChatGPT. Everyone understands that. That has such a massive, powerful persuasion now. People are starting to use ChatGPT more than they're using Google, because it's giving you more up-to-date, informed answers. And not just bits of words from websites. So it's actually giving you strategies, things like that. And what you can actually do with ChatGPT is crazy. So if you're a beginner and with something like ChatGPT, and then just learning about sort of automation and how things can work with that. And there's plenty of YouTube channels out there. And if anyone does want to reach out to me, then that's fine. On Instagram and Twitter as well. No. Just if you've got any questions, especially if you're thinking, can I do this? Do you know what I mean? And you can. Because the information that's out there on YouTube can make anybody a millionaire. You just have to apply it.
Yeah, well, that's the dream that everyone solves, but it's down to, yeah, like you said, the individual. Brilliant. And I'm glad you just said there about reaching out to you. So we'll stick those in the bio so that if anyone does want to contact you to give you a call or not call, send you a message and get hold of you then. Cool. Well, thank you. I really do appreciate you coming on board, kind of sharing your story and thoughts. Yeah. And I know that I'll probably hear more about you. And I know Leanne always comes off the phone having a bit of a chuckle and having enjoyed chatting to you. So yeah, I have as well. So thanks very much. And yeah, all the best.
Thanks. Cheers for the invite, James.
Cheers. Right.